Hi, my name is Gunnar Froh and I'm your host on the Wunder Mobility podcast.
Welcome back to the Wunder Mobility podcast, first edition of 2026. This is our second time recording the kickoff episode together with Bojan.
Right.
Exactly. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning.
In Cologne, they say three times is tradition. And so we are on track to launching our own new tradition here. We are going to reflect on 2025, share what we think the highlights were, the trends are that we see emerging in shared mobility, give an update on where we are as a company, and then predictions for 2026. Where's your mind right now? Where did you just come from?
It's, I think, if you look at the whole market and what happened in the last years, it was like super exciting to see 2025, what happened, the numbers we achieved, how the industry matured. And my mind right now is like speculating what will be achieved 2026, but also the future with autonomous driving now playing a role and so many different things.
You've gotten really active in the last weeks and months on this topic of AVs, and I think we'll get to it. Let's first try to recap a little bit about 2025. What were some of the developments that we saw last year? And we collected some topics, and some of them were not new, but more amplified last year. And let's go through and sort of categorize what took place.
Right, yeah, exactly. I think that like so many different roles like involved in this whole reflection. So you have kind of what's happened on the city side, municipalities, how they change, the operator side. Then we need to distinguish between car sharing, micromobility. So it will be definitely a very exciting topic to talk about. And then probably also keep in focus the whole ecosystem, like how the city is actually changing when thinking about all these different players and how they play together. Like I think that a lot of maturity happened here. Was achieved here actually, and it's very interesting. Like we have numbers here from reports, from various reports in the industry that also shows that profitability is achieved and it's getting even better. So yes, it's not only profitability being profitable, but how can you actually really make increase now the profits in general?
Yes, this was really nice to see some companies hitting their first profitable quarter. Some are now in profitability for good. We've seen valuations go up again, confidence of investors returning. And we were looking for headlines for last year. And I think one of the candidates was the post-hype consolidation year. So there was on the surface, yeah, some consolidation, some retreating also taking place. Some secondary cities were exited. They used to have multiple sharing providers across smaller cities in France, in Germany. And now some people have left. Some people have merged or sold their portfolios or just shrank to profitability, not in fleeting new vehicles, you know, organically reducing fleet size and focusing more on unit economics.
Yes. And I think it's also, I think there was a report now recently like showing every year which players consolidated and on the market. Right. And you also see this number is still there and we see still like consolidation going on, but it also dropped throughout the last years. And this is exactly now, I think 2025 is one of this last year, so at least on the operator side where these consolidations are happening. Let's see how it goes further. But I think right now we're also entering, and let's talk then later about 2026, but we are definitely, we see it's getting less and less.
So shared mobility, no longer as a VC case necessarily, a VC experiment, but more as infrastructure business. And that was one headline, post-hype consolidation year. That phase, that was still dominant last year, but it's maybe coming to an end. The other aspect we saw were cities taking back control and putting KPIs in place about availability, response times, shifting their focus to service quality of operators.
And we also see it on the operator side, like us working with the operators, how important these SLAs are getting. You're winning contracts with cities based on availability of your fleet. Yes. How reliable can you be? That like, what kind of reliability can you offer that vehicles are not parked on the sidewalk and so on and so on. So it's very interesting that these SLAs of operations are getting so much into focus and it's less like you don't win anymore like only by having a very innovative hardware itself. It's also like your operational capability and also profitability in the end.
Yes, and our perception was that cities are moving to longer and more exclusive contracts. So it used to be the number of operators that were allowed in a tender used to be larger. Now it's fewer. And when we get to predictions, I think that might get even more extreme.
Yes, and it's also getting finally accepted as part of the city infrastructure and mobility offering. It's not anymore like kind of this thing where nobody really knows what it will be about, like a lot of scooters being in a city or bikes and so on. It's really becoming an essential part. And we also saw it last year when there was the strike of the public transportation in London, where also, for instance, Forest or Lime jumped in and provided for a lot of people an alternative solution that they still can go to work wherever they're going in the city. So that was very interesting to see how it's getting more and more integrated into the mobility offering.
Mm-hmm. So post-type consolidation, cities taking even more control, and then utilization as the important metric. We heard less people talking about fleet sizes, growth rates, even app downloads, and more rides per vehicle per day, downtimes, rebalancing costs. So utilization was really top of mind.
I think so as well. And also keeping the users with you as an operator, actually, and offer them something where they like to come back and like retention in the end and so on and so on. So it was a very interesting shift also. It's not only about generating more and more users now, it's about optimizing the existing user base that you have.
Yeah, and it seemed like another headline around hardware innovation seems to be getting slower. In the beginning, this was critical some years ago. Obviously, you know, vehicle lifetimes too short and so on. New generations in fast iterations. That's kind of matured, but now software is also an area to innovate, and it's also maturing. There are fewer new vehicle launches, but there's a lot of progress on the software side in predictive maintenance, fraud prevention, demand-based pricing, operational automation.
Exactly. Like, I think that's also like something that we've seen happening in last year is that if you want to be able to deliver these SLAs for cities, if you want to stand out to your competition as an operator, you really need to have your operations under control. And software was for sure one of the enablers to streamline this whole workflows and to be able actually to guarantee that to a city.
Yeah, and kind of an unsexy underlying truth that we found seems to be some of the best performing operators last year were running older vehicles better, in some cases growing their fleet, but then not with factory brand new vehicles. It's actually...
Exactly, and they have mastered the refurbishment actually of vehicles, also replacing parts that potentially haven't been that good in the beginning with other parts, like changing the saddle or similar things. So like a lot of optimization is going on.
And then interesting from last year was for us to realize the performance of car sharing, because bikes and scooters have really dominated the mindshare for a long time, you know, driven by large funding rounds and huge fleet sizes. But when you look at the revenue per user, the unit economics of these different modes sometimes overlooked the large number of also profitable car sharing operators that are kind of have been growing more quietly over these last years.
Yeah. And I think also here there was this fundamental change too, that a lot of operators realized they are actually an asset-driven business. It's like a rent-a-car company in the end, like how they're operating since years. And they also changed this mindset. So they're fully focusing now on procurement, getting the right vehicles from the beginning into the fleet, utilizing them in the best possible way, keeping operations up. And then in the end, also when selling them again, making profits. So it's very interesting how the business models changed there of the companies.
And our final headline for what we think was interesting last year, sort of the rise of the unsexy operator, where some of the winners last were regionally focused, operationally obsessed, and not so visible on media, not a global brand ambition, but just city by city, and in some cases even only one city, operational excellence.
Yes. And what was very interesting, again, to see for us is that especially these operators, they knew the city so well that they could offer to the city something that others could not offer that easily, because they had the right people in the teams. They understood what the city needs, doesn't need. And that was really like a strength throughout the last year for a lot of these operators, that they managed to get this offering really also on the road in terms of results.
So that's a little bit the themes that we saw last year, and I think some will continue into next year, but we'll also talk a little bit about more concrete predictions. Before we go there, let's also reflect a bit on what happened at Wunder Mobility in the last 12 months and where we stand right now. And I think there are different dimensions to share that were really interesting and important for us last year. And one is around our whole positioning and focus, and how the client base has also evolved, and how we try to be much more deliberate in where we invest.
I think, and this happened to a lot of software providers in the past, especially in this industry, is that we all started from a position, it's a new market, we need to build things very fast, we just need to close some gaps, and then we ended up in building basically a lot. And I think a big strategic change for us last year was to really refocus, pick one or two use cases we really fully, like in a good way, want to support, and also change our mindset by not only fulfilling open feature requests, but really playing a crucial role in becoming the experts also, and suggesting and helping operators with also fresh ideas that they potentially have thought about, but just in a bit of a different way. And then we could consolidate so many interesting insights from so many different customers that in the end, we also see this now more and more happening, that we can really put some innovation into place that otherwise would be more difficult for them to achieve.
Yeah, I think this here, our understanding of these different use cases that exist within vehicle sharing has really grown. And we've become also more realistic, more honest about what being excellent in these different use cases requires, and how we can't, let's say, be in all places or in too many places at once, right? So,
and it was very difficult in the past, because it's like, you know, it's a lot of shiny things going on in the industry, and like very exciting use cases. Like we get in contact with, for example, delivery use case, where you have a shared fleet that is being like creating a use case for delivery drivers, where they can flexibly get vehicles for just a couple of hours to deliver food and bring it back. They have a mobility guarantee and so on. But it's very exciting, and we like our technology fits there then partially for this use case. But then in the end, if you really want to build this use case to every extent and, you know, fulfill like every customer need and user need, then it becomes again very intense. And I think that was a big learning for us, that we said, okay, there are dozens of different possibilities what we could do out there. Delivery use case, then we had rent a car use case, like digitalizing the rent a car space. Corporate sharing is a big topic flying around. There's so many different things that we just said, hey, we need to really focus and rather get two or three of them really good than having 12 done to 60%, right? And that was from our perspective, I think, a major refocus. And
yeah, and in addition to the use cases where we want to be kind of very upfront and specific about whether we are supporting them or not, is the segment of operators or of clients, whether it's a turnkey solution, and then you are looking at realistically 200, even 400 operators on your platform. Side note, there are 400 car sharing operators in Germany alone, so that really does exist in the market, and there are software players who've gone down this path, and they currently have 200, 300 plus operators on the platform, or whether you are working with regional champions that require a high feature depth, customization abilities. They have engineering on their side. They require detailed account management, and we've focused on this second part. So we are dealing with right now a group of about 20 regional champions as our clients, and who have a lot of growth potential and who have stable operations and profitable business cases.
Yes, so that, I think this is also exactly this insight where we said, hey, we have so much to do there still. And let's focus rather on this couple of these use cases like car sharing and bike sharing out there. And now putting car sharing into focus, like it's still kind of a young industry. It's around, let's say, 25 years old, with higher growth like the last 15 years in there. And there's like still so much to do if you look out there, and it's very exciting to optimize there.
So one aspect to share about what happened at Wunder Mobility last year is this positioning. Focus, kind of a headline, focus on certain use cases, certain customer profiles. The other topic area where we spent time and invested was around innovation. So we really made an effort, even if the industry is still young and new and resources are always constrained and you're pulled in many directions, to have a consistent investment throughout the year into certain innovation topics. And let's share a little bit more about what we did there and how much.
like I said in the beginning, we focused very much, you know, in the past on having this foundation, this 60%, 70% of a use case covered. And when we started now diving deeper into the use cases in the last year, we've seen kind of these three big headlines. And one is on the operational side, the other one is on the marketing side, and the third one is on the data side, right? Data and AI side. And especially looking now on the operational and marketing side, having these key metrics of our customers as our own metrics, looking at ourselves as somebody that helps our customers to compete with the big players out there like Lime or Miles here in Germany. That's something that fundamentally also changed our approach, how we do software and deliver features. That's like this one big chunk. And then obviously also the whole hype around AI and data, it was not something that we ignored. Like we started heavily to also invest into these use cases and understand what it would mean for, like, what does it mean for shared mobility if we start applying this AI topics. And in the end, I mentioned operations and marketing. Now, every single thing that we do also for our customers there, we're thinking if AI can actually help automate this, and probably just coming one step ahead already to 2026. But this is for sure something that we have on the big card that will change again fundamentally the operations and also marketing activities.
And in terms of the capabilities of our platform over the last 18 months, it's really grown a lot, starting with the combination of Wunder Mobility and GoUrban, and then the developments we've made together. So we've grown into supporting natively not only the traditional free-floating sharing, but also pre-booking situations, multimodal fleets, and now 25, a topic we've invested in consistently and together with clients, station flexible sharing, sort of a newer term, basically meaning A to B rentals.
Yes, and it's
because free-floating is kind of a niche for only the most densest areas, and in reality, to be economical in many cases, it has to be a station-based system, but then to really be user-friendly, an A to B, ideally. But how to manage this operationally, even especially if you combine it with pre-booking. So you're going to allow a rental in a station in the future where you don't know yet if the vehicle will be available because it might have moved to a different station. And building improvements and automations around this has been an area we invested in because we believe that is big.
Yeah, exactly. And it's super interesting that you're mentioning that because, for example, A to B was like a huge learning journey. And we also talked to a lot of other software providers that also, you know, explained us the challenges behind it. And the interesting thing there is that you need to optimize like the whole scheduling, that you exactly know where the vehicle is going to be in the future. You need to plan ahead. But at the same time, you should also not go with an approach where you know where, for example, the license plate is, but mostly have a more like a pooling of vehicles based on categories and so on. So there's like so much details that you can go into and optimize operations there as well. But in the end, what we also saw, it fits quite well with the remaining platform that we have and the learnings that we're gathering there, because also relocating results in tasks and so on. So there's like a lot of potential, like a lot of fun actually going into so much details there in operations.
Yeah, and one thing that was important for me throughout this last year, also when it comes to innovation, was always velocity. We've kind of mentioned this word a lot internally. So it's quality and velocity. And just to kind of give a feeling for that, here Q4 has closed. We're now sort of just got started on our Q1 roadmap, and order of magnitude, there was something like 500 features and improvements that were shipped in Q4. And we're now exposing this publicly in a weekly change log through the website, that sort of historic. So weekly change log of what has just happened. There will be a forward-looking element in a few weeks where the roadmap becomes public, and then the summary and interpretation of that in our monthly newsletters. But that's, I think, for me, really important, because some of the directions where things need to be heading are clear. We are early enough sort of in this innovation that it's a little bit obvious what needs to happen. And we also, it's about how quickly do you get there. And now let's tie this together with sort of initial learnings, experiences, adopting AI into the development cycle, because there are some interesting shifts happening as well, also in terms of where the bottleneck moves now that engineers can become so much faster in what they're building.
Exactly. I think that's more on the internal side, how we actually approach feature development and look into that. AI, obviously, not only on the product side, but also on the internal side, played a huge role for us, and it's still playing. And this is really understanding how you can leverage that also to increase the velocity there in the end. And as you asked, kind of where the focus is moving on, it actually allows us to move the focus in the most crucial phase, and this is the whole discovery phase. So yes. It means that we not only understand the problem that we need to solve properly, but also spend a lot of time on the whole ideation and solution phase before we go into execution. And the execution is now getting less and less. And what you need to be very careful now is that things get executed fast, but you also need to execute the right things. You need to focus that the workflows fit and that this is really a high impact problem and with a very good solution that you're delivering. And that's becoming now very interesting also for us. That it fits quite well to our refocus from the whole last year and the whole push towards having this key metrics with us that our operators care about and then spending their way more time. And it's a cool general change, I think, in the whole development process.
One thing that stuck with me from our last weeks and months in our own experience when it comes to adopting AI and AI tools into engineering, there are different like adoption paths for individual people and for teams, mostly on an individual level. And that we were able to see cases where engineers that are sort of very experimental and moving at the forefront of this all of a sudden turn out to be 2 to 3 times as productive as people who are still more observing. And how this kind of realization, eventually we will all adopt this. That's a matter of months, not years. And then what you just mentioned, how when we will be able to build this much more, what's our capacity to plan this properly and to discover? And so like the proportion of, you know, product owners and maybe user research relative to engineering might change a little bit in the team. But that sounds like such a great problem to have if you can actually discover more things because the ability to build is just increased.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, but it's still like in product management, you had always this huge focus in building the right things, like solving the right problems, building the right things.
Yeah.
And this will become now even more and more important because you will be able to build more. So you can also easily build a product that's just bloated, not really solving problems out there. You delivered a lot, but the impact is limited. And this is, I think, for us also, that's a very interesting phase to be in.
I think our third internal headline for last year, so one was focus, then innovation, and the other one is stability.
Right.
That continued to be a topic for us throughout last year and continues to be because even more than new features, we have to continuously deliver stability to our clients on a 24/7 level. And we've made additional investments there into tooling and into capacity. Can you share some of?
Yeah, exactly. I think what's quite interesting about this is, right, that we are building a mission-critical software solution. So if everybody's relying also on our uptime, if we are offline for 10 minutes, then it has a huge impact on operations. You get a lot of customer calls, like hell is loose kind of on the operational side. And this is also something that what we also understand that and understood, it takes time till you also reach this stability level and a lot of know-how to actually get there and keep it up there. And for us last year, like I think that's also very foundational, you know, improving the monitoring on our side, making sure that we see every single thing before even our customers feel it. We see that there's could be an infrastructure problem on our side. So there was like a lot of things put in also on in terms of effort that we make sure that the incidents are being reduced to a minimum. And we also have a public status page where you see that in the end that our uptime is very high. We are fulfilling our SLAs and we will definitely continue pushing for that. And what I think what's very important in this whole part of the journey is also this whole development mindset, because now we're pushing on the one side for more velocity, but at the same time, we need to make sure that things that we deliver also prove the stability level that we stand for. And this is also like something that I learned at the same time to really love, because as you're such a crucial part also of a business, what you're delivering, it's also a lot of fun to actually take this challenge on and be this trusted partner that you can just put things to it and you know that we will basically fulfill our promise there. And then also, if, which rarely happens, things don't work like they should, which sometimes can happen, then obviously I'm also, it's also interesting to be in the middle of this fight to help mitigate the impact on operations to a minimum.
Let's zoom out again from Wunder Mobility and talk a little bit about next year and predictions for next year, industry-wide predictions. And we've sort of collected a few before we came together here. And one that I want to start out with is how shared mobility will be regulated like public transport, but unfortunately without the subsidies. So we think that cities will go even more in this direction of giving very specific expectations to operators, maybe demanding SLAs similar to buses or trains, requiring coverage, guaranteed coverage also of specific neighborhoods, and maybe penalizing downtime. So it's basically like public responsibility with private risk.
Definitely. And I think also for the cities, they're also like, we see clearly the trends how cities are changing their approach to mobility itself. Like I would put this headline of a marketplace that is actually where the city is actually turning out to be a marketplace for mobility, where you have different mobility offerings. Privately owned cars are definitely being pushed out more and more. Like streets, like lanes on the street are getting less. Parking spots are being removed. So this whole marketplace thing is becoming more and more crucial. We see, for example, Paris, like they're changing and continuing to push for more and more bike infrastructure. Obviously, sharing is has a benefit from it because it's getting, again, easier for a bike sharing to operate in such a city and have a good offering. Same for London. We see in Hamburg, car sharing parking spots being utilized heavily. I, for example, with my personal experience, I know that if I take a car sharing car and go to a certain spot, I will have a parking spot while I don't have it with my privately owned car. So either I take public transportation or I take a car sharing car, depending on my need. But that's already like a whole mindset change there. And so this is really cool to see. And I think this will definitely continue in 2026, is this whole change that shared mobility by itself is becoming crucial part of the whole marketplace offering that a city has in the end. And this will also determine the quality, like the life quality a city can offer. And every city is fighting for be the most livable city in the world, right? There's always this ranking every year. And I'm quite sure that this shared mobility is a very good part of this core in mobility, not only public transportation.
And then our other prediction is about how the packaging will change, car sharing, bike sharing, becoming closer to a Spotify subscription kind of setup than to your classic Hertz car rental service. Let's talk a little bit about this. You've talked about integration with public transport, maybe on the packaging side, then bundling with public transport passes, maybe more usage-based subscriptions. How do you see the sort of how this product gets offered evolve from a per minute fee to what are more common models this year?
I think what we definitely see here is that it's being integrated partially with the whole public transportation sector. So you get discounts if you have it's in Germany, it's the Deutschlandkarte. You get a discount for various sharing operators already now if you do that. I think in 2026, it will be more and more the case that this whole mobility offering is getting even more integrated, like you say, where you have bundles that you, for example, you have 50 minutes for free if you already have a yearly public transportation ticket, also for sharing. Or the Deutschland card, like the German card for public transportation, can also be used partially for shared mobility every month with a certain budget. So I think that as the cities are realizing that shared mobility is becoming this essential part of the city, it also needs to be integrated into the offering of the city more visibly. Some are taking the mobility as a service approach, right, with their own mass app. At the same time, we've still seen like limited adoption of these apps, unfortunately. Some cities with a better adoption, for example, Berlin has a better adoption with Yelby than other cities that we've seen. But in the end, mass, unfortunately, still hasn't shown this huge thing that people really always open the mass app first. But at the same time, this could change if also the offering, also the financial benefit is there actually to be in such an ecosystem and have one subscription that where you can use multiple different transportation modes. Mm-hmm. I would love it in the end.
Mm-hmm. And then what are the topics that will dominate inside of these operators and their teams this year? One tagline that we came up with was how the best operators might look more like airlines than startups this year. And that's because their playbooks will talk a lot about yield management, route optimization, demand forecasting will be something they work on. So again, going back to all about utilization and how do they now implement this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's I think that's a development we've anyways already seen, but it will definitely continue 2026. And this is full focus on operational excellence, really understanding your operations, having the right ratio of employees to bikes on the streets, cars on the streets. What's the ratio? If we look now, it's very interesting. Thinking about now autonomous driving, and then you see the Waymos and Tesla robotaxis now out there. They all have a huge challenge with getting operations right. Mm-hmm. If you check the ratio of employees and the cars out there on the streets, it's compared to a car sharing provider here in Europe, like Green Mobility, it's completely different. And you see where they are right now. And if you listen also to, you know, statements, podcasts with Elon Musk about robotaxis, you also hear always this thing that operations are actually the big thing they need to master before they can roll out more cars. It's not even the autonomous driving itself that's limiting them, the technology behind it, but also the operations to get it out. And I think this is also like this proof, like what incredible work the shared mobility operators have achieved throughout the last years, that they get there, that they have a sustainable business, that profits are growing and that operations are getting better and better every year. And it takes work. It takes also, obviously, improvements on every side, software and also business structure. But it's incredible to look at that.
And then our other prediction was on, again, cities, how some cities will now explicitly choose a single operator per modality. So they might choose one bike sharing operator, one car sharing operator, give out relatively long contracts, but with strict performance criteria. And so in a way, on a regional level, it will look like less competition, but it gives them leverage to demand more of these operators. And on a European or global level, it will sort of drive this fragmentation. Local champions maybe winning a market or a small number of markets and then being profitable there, even though they are not a global brand.
Yeah, I think so as well. And it's also good for both sides, right? Because in the end, the operators know they will have the demand. We see the first reports now coming out where we have this increase from, you know, in terms of profitability of bike sharing, where it's not proven it is a profitable business if you do it in a right way. And the same also for the cities, because if they need to guarantee to their inhabitants they will offer a sustainable, you know, shared mobility service, they can do this if they have a couple of operators they can rely on. They know that the SLAs will be fulfilled and that it's more like a partnership than fighting for the number of users registered, right?
And finally, our prediction for 26 will be that another big name, another big brand, formerly successful company in our space, will fail. A well-known operator with a strong brand, a large fleet in many cities, and that they will struggle because these operations didn't scale. Their legacy tech is becoming a drag, and some contracts they might have entered in the past and that they have to continue to fulfill are now unprofitable.
Yes, and the problem is it's like a kind of a circle here, because you need to have a very successful business to be able to purchase new hardware. New hardware unlocks you again a better user experience. And once you cannot that easily fundraise more money now like you could in the past. So once you are in this circle that you cannot really offer what the user needs, like, for example, this great piece of hardware, but you have five-year-old scooters, bikes, whatever it is, that are not well maintained. And at the same time, you need to actually to change that, but you're not making enough money to do this, then it becomes very challenging.
So if shared mobility is no longer about growth in 2026, what is it actually about now?
I think optimization, numbers, getting into the details, and just making sure that you get your KPIs right. And like first, choose the right KPIs, and then secondly, optimize there as much as you can. Prevent any mistakes in terms of hardware choice. These are the most expensive one. And I think especially now in the few, like in the past, you could quite easily choose the wrong one. Now we see the most established brands out there, like hardware providers. So I think this it will be like just a game of focus and details and optimization.
And I think it's really interesting and kind of timely what you mentioned in the beginning about these AVs becoming a topic also in vehicle sharing now, how eventually they will show up in 26 in some sharing fleets, probably in small quantities, making first experiences with the potential to provide more service level, but actually a much more fundamental shift behind it, mm-hmm. where these two neighboring but still separated markets of vehicle sharing and ride hailing eventually are going to converge, and where are the profit pools when that is one supply chain, basically, and who has what role. That will be really, really interesting. And I think that's giving, raising a lot of interesting new questions, and we're trying to get behind and understand what people are thinking and where direction is going. And we've made plans to also launch a meetup series on this topic. Some years ago, we had meetups and summits as one mobility bring the industry together around the first hype cycle, let's say, of actually most of the time free-floating micromobility. I think that has sort of sorted itself out to some extent. It's become bikes and not kick scooters for one, and then it's in partnership with cities and in some cases run for cities and now profitable in many cases. But the next interesting disruption will be that new technology being phased into our industry. And it's really interesting, how can we best prepare for it? How can we support our clients in it? And we don't want to kind of get ahead of ourselves. I think there will not be meaningful business behind it this year. But we have to think development roadmaps in quarters and years.
Yes. And as the new hype cycle is starting, we also need to start a new meetup series.
We do. And it's coming. And then final sort of remark, I think this will not show up, you know, in revenue this year, but the preparation is already running now, because a lot is at stake, is to what extent will all this shared mobility be considered public infrastructure versus a fragmented private market, right? Mm-hmm. And then referring back to, we're recording this on January 14th, so recently this week in Germany, the public railway company Deutsche Bahn basically released this study and made sort of a big argument about how shared autonomous vehicles would be so much more efficient in the future if they were a public project, sort of, you know, provisioned centrally by the government as part of public transportation, versus even more congested cities with AVs and driving around with competing private players. And I think it won't be 100% one way or the other, but this is the other sort of dimension to watch for in shared mobility. How do these AVs get inflated? What potential do they have? What tools are now needed to support this? But then this whole sharing industry, will that be largely a private endeavor next to cars, private competitors, public transportation? Or to what extent will cities and governments take over, and it's basically a tender business into these public utility settings.
In the end, I don't think that much will change in terms of profitability of this industry, because in shared mobility, if you think about it, they are so much focused on operations and getting really operations perfect. Even if they would only provide the vehicles, make sure that they're available, and for example, demand is driven by public like a mobility as a service app from the city or similar, they would only lose the demand generation part, because this is coming from them. But in the end, the key part of the business, like operations, availability of the fleet, making sure the car is clean, making sure it's in a good shape, that's all still there. And there will be still like a lot of providers, right, that need to make sure that this is this need is fulfilled.
I think there are different potential scenarios for the future. What you're describing is kind of a very light setup, where the government or the city might only provide a shared interface towards these private solutions. But on the other end of the extreme, there would be where they basically tender out for a company to fulfill coverage on certain areas over, for example, 5 or 10 years, like they are doing now with buses to run on a fixed schedule for 5 or 10 years. And then private companies, maybe Veolia and smaller ones, regional ones, are competing to now send, have a bus, have a driver, send this bus around on the pre-described schedule. And prices are pre-negotiated for these for this whole time period. And I think like across Europe, for example, where kind of much of our focus is, like all things will exist, but what part of the end market, sort of the trips taken, of the euros spent, will be through these very orchestrated, centralized, sort of, you know, public tender processes where that money will be distributed versus in a private market. And not necessarily saying that one is good or bad or the other, but that can influence both how big this market gets. If it's sort of a central decision that this investment is being made, a program should be offered and so on, there are political arguments behind it why people might decide to invest in this for quality of life and so on, market size, but then also how do you compete is the key muscle, for example, operational efficiency or relationships. And
but we see it a bit in bike sharing, right? Because in bike sharing, the price is capped. So you need to offer the first, in some cases, you need to offer for the first 30 minutes for 50 cents. And then you need to figure out how you make your business sustainable. But this is also working already. So we see these operators being profitable, even though they have kind of this setup. So, and they're obviously also subsidized indirectly.
I think bike sharing is a perfect example where all the different setups exist. In some cases, you gain a license to operate X many vehicles. You set your own price, whatever is up to you. Maybe you have restrictions on where to park them. And in other cases, pricing and everything else is pre-agreed for a number of times and you kind of bid into this tender. And I think, and then some companies like Donkey Republic or Nextbike can operate in different setups. They are flexible enough.
That would be interesting to see what happens to Lime if they get like a price restriction in Paris, for example.
Yes.
And if they still can operate and how this would work like.
Yes. And I think that car sharing is coming a bit from where it's not in the focus, not only of this industry kind of debate, but also of the regulators so much. It's not seen as an area that people would, or that governments, that cities would invest in and try to regulate too much. For example, pricing, there are no restrictions on pricing right now. But when car sharing shows up as autonomous shuttles, it's getting, and then also the public transport operators are infleeting these kind of vehicles to be more cost effective and have better service level, then it's in direct competition. And the question will come whether that's a fulfillment partner for the public interest or a private alternative. And I think that's something that is sort of a few years down the line, but the mindsets are being prepared for that right now already, as can be seen in this kind of Deutsche Bahn study, why invest a lot of time and get a research institute and so on to contribute, because opinion is already, we're already starting to shape opinions in one way or the other.
Now, you mentioned AVs. Do you think in European cities, robotaxis or shuttles will win?
Meaning shuttles is a pooled service and then
Yes.
I think that both products are offered and at different price levels. Mm-hmm. And what's the market share of one over the other? Probably in reality, most trips are one person. I think you can maybe see from Moja or so in Hamburg, where it's been around for a few years. It's quite optimized. It's really good, high service level. I think the average number of passengers per trip is, I don't know the latest, but it's like maybe 2.0 or 1.8 or something like this, but it's not 3 or 4. Most often you are alone, sometimes a second person, that's already good. So I think most of the time that, and there's a segment of users who pay extra to have the direct trip for sure. Then there's the group in between who is trying to save money and hoping to be alone, like ordering the pooled ride, hoping to be alone. And some people actually end up pooled. I think until it gets to really a meaningful scale, the vision of the city of Hamburg is 10,000 robotaxis by 2030 in the city, all pooled, then I imagine you can barely take a trip alone if you book a pooled product. But I think that also, people want to drive alone, but either pricing, that might not be strong enough, or the city mandate basically will have them end up in pools. Because if you convert current traffic into AV traffic, it's still a jam, a traffic jam. As a city, you need the pooling effect on top.
And if you think actually today taxis are privately, like it's a privately driven business, bus is not. So it could be also like that robot tech, or individual robot taxis are more privately owned mobility offerings like cab drivers. And then you have shuttles that could be buses, kind of like buses operated. But let's see in which
That's
direction
That's right. Including sort of a P2P product, right? These privately owned AVs that act as autonomous taxis for part of their time. I think in the next 5 years, we'll see some cities in Europe limit how AVs can use the road, for example, not drive empty, or maybe combine a rollout of AV services with congestion charge to really not have an increase of vehicles on the street, but then take private vehicles out of the mix to some extent.
Introduce carpooling lanes again. And
for that you need space, which you mostly don't have in Europe.
Right.
But I think congestion charge would be really interesting for another topic. It's not popular, but Stockholm is a success example, and now Manhattan or New York has introduced it last year, and I think it makes a ton of sense. It's sort of like definitely a public good that you're using right now if you drive into the city during rush hour and are kind of one of the people slowing everybody else down. Lots will still happen. Some things are already clear. We're trying to maintain velocity to not only provide stability, but also a lot of innovation. And it's really awesome to collaborate with a group of people who can now see that their businesses are winning, those regional champions. And I'm so glad we are also connecting more in person again, and hopefully including around our upcoming meetups. And we'll share more about those on social soon.
Perfect.
All right. I think that's a wrap. That's a kickoff for this
that's
year.
Cool.
All the best.